At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Low Ride, welcome back to the Survival and Basic Badass Podcast with Adam and Chuck. Well, today we're going to talk to Adam Winch from Defenders USA, and we're going to talk about concealed carry, what you need to know in a shooting incident, what you need to know to be prepared for one. Adam, give us a little bit of your background here quick. Let us know where you're coming from.
All right. Well, good morning to you. Glad to be here. So my background, grew up a missionary kid in West Africa. So still learning English. So grew up over there, came back to the States right about college time, finished up the last little bit of high school in the States, then immediately ran off to a military college. So think like VMI, West Point, Citadel, things like that. Later, joined the U.S. Army and went in as a MP, military police officer. After about a year or two of that, got a little tired of it and turned in, stayed MP, but went into some things like, if you know the acronyms, ERT, QRF, SRT, PSD, you know, that type thing. So think like military SWAT team, protecting personnel, kind of plainclothes stuff where you protect executives or senators or whatever, right? Wounded soldiers, those type things. Did a little, I don't know, 12 or 13 months boots on ground in Kuwait, Iraq, Saudi Arabia. And then also police officer in Grand Junction, Colorado, for a little over 10 years, almost, I think 10 and a half years, where I was patrol officer. And then, of course, street crimes unit officer, SWAT team, trainer, yada, yada. In the meantime, while I was running, being a cop, I started a gun training business because, you know how it is. As a cop, I saw too many victims of crime. So I figured those people need the same training my buddies and I have to survive, right? I was tired of it. So I started a gun training business, and it got a reputation. It was total accident. I didn't mean to. It just, I guess it was okay. And it got a reputation. Next thing you know, I got more and more phone calls. And it got to where ultimately I was so busy that, you know, I could do whatever. Well, I'd always... kid in Africa, I used to read a lot. So I always wanted to be a cop and a soldier. And then I wanted to own a business in America. Well, I'd done the first two. I was so busy. I kind of went, all right, I've done these two. Well, you know what? Let's try this business in America thing and see what happens. Right. And well, that's been 10 years now, about 10 and a half. And you know, if it fails, maybe I'll go back to cop work and all, but I sure enjoy this. And I don't deal with dirt bags every day like I did as a cop, right?
Yeah, that's gotta be.
Yeah, bad people don't come see me anymore. Good people do. So, and I enjoy that. And I enjoy helping good people. So it turned into a training company that does way more than guns. But now it's Defenders USA. And, you know, it's just we've trained tens of thousands of civilian, military, and law enforcement. In fact, last week, I was training a bunch of cops. Week before, a bunch of cops and civilians before that. And I love it, enjoy it, and going to keep doing it until, I don't know, something more interesting comes along or God calls me home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's funny. I had a buddy who was a cop about, I don't know, about 6 years ago we were talking. He was in New York when I was there, and I just moved out down south. But anyway, he would tell me, he's like big 6'4 guy and you know, a strong guy, and he's like, you know, I used to love it, and now I'm retiring. Because he goes, 5 years ago, so maybe 2010, he's like, you know, you're a cop, you get respect, people are cool with you, whatever. He's like, now I'll have a 90-pound kid who wants to pick a fight with me, and he's like, everybody's coming at me, and he's like, I can't handle being in a fight every day and being on guard all the time. And he's like, it's just too much. And so I understand the perspective of not necessarily, you know, wanting to deal with dirtbags or whatever. You know, go ahead.
Well, I got to tell you, I like the fights, man. I love
A little excitement, huh?
But after a while, you're like, all right, I'm fighting every other week or every week or whatever it is.
Right.
And that means a lot of paper. And that also means a lot of scrutiny for mere admin just because somebody wanted to get in a fight and I just happened to be standing there, right?
Right.
And, you know, or going up and they got to fight a cop today for some reason. And boy, I tell you, it gets a little old after a while. That's the beauty of what I do now is I get to deal with good people, not bad.
There you go. So, and that's it. I mean, doing the shooting range, I mean, definitely. And you said you train a lot of cops. You do a lot of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's everybody. Yeah. The full spectrum. Like you said, there's a need. I got to say, a lot of the cops I talk to don't shoot often.
No.
And I mean, you know, training wise, you know, they don't. And they're like, oh, well, once a year I go out and I qualify. And that's, you know, maybe I do 2 hours before that, you know, a week before, and then go do my qualification. And then that's all I do. And so if we kind of change that in the world, that maybe would be a better thing. And, you know, I always read these statistics of like a cop hitting a moving target is like, you know, hard to do. It's hard for anybody to do, but you would think, you know, a cop, you know, you'd have a higher level of accuracy. So I'm sure what you're doing is making a big difference. And
so you bring up an area that's a real passion for me, right?
Yeah.
You know, as a cop, I was always one of the top shooters in my department, right? And
right.
I thought I was all that in a bucket of neck bones.
Right, right.
And, you know, you had to use a gun on the street and made my hits, got all my hits.
Right.
But you know, I always thought I was a pretty good shooter. Well, after I got into my thing where I had to use a gun on the street,
right.
I realized my training didn't fit the shooting I was, you know, I had to do.
Right.
And so I started going to training myself. And I walked in, you know, I researched what I thought was some of the best trainers out there. We did a lot of work to figure it out. So I go and I show up to this course, right? And it's in California. And I go show up at this course and I walk in thinking SWAT dog, right?
I got this.
I know I'll probably be the best one here. Within 10 minutes, I was so humbled by how bad of a shot I was as a cop. And these are all these non-cops in here. And I was getting my butt handed to me on the range. And that's when I finally started realizing the vast majority of cops can't shoot.
Yeah.
And I was one of them. I mean, I did really well in the cop world, right? And that's pretty traditional. But compared to a lot of civilians, I didn't realize that
the training our
training is behind the times.
It is.
I love training cops. I did it the last couple of weeks. And they come in thinking, cop, gunfighter. And next thing you know, they run into somebody like I've become, and now suddenly they're like, oh, and they realize they need training outside the LE world because the LE world's not preparing them very well.
Yeah. I mean, just stuff I read on like FBI statistics and stuff. And but I mean, you even see like, you know, you'll shoot on a target range, you know, your average guy with a rifle goes out to a field or something or whatever. You do a bunch of shooting or even, you know, you go to the gun range, whatever. You do a bunch of shooting and then when you're shooting the groundhog in the backyard and he's running across the lawn, people are never hitting that guy. You know, it's like, and I'm like, well, you know, here's the problem is because it's moving and it's not what you expect. And after you start training with like real, you know, situations, it's easy to up your game with a little, you know, hey, here's how you hold your gun. Here's why you're pulling to the side. Yeah. Here's a little bit of good training goes a long way. And taking a course like you guys offer, that's awesome because a lot of people need it, I think.
Yeah, it's needed, right? I'm not dogging on cops. I love cops.
No, I didn't mean that. I wasn't trying to say that.
I'm not saying that either. I'm just saying, I mean, I love them. I'm married to a cop, right? That's my background. I love cops. My issue is that in most defensive gun uses in America, on average, the civilian will hit their target more often than the cop will, right? We have an accuracy rate in the cop world of somewhere around 18 to 23% in our gunfight. And I'd tell you, that's a terrible thing, right? I mean, there's a Johnny Cochran attached to every round that you shoot, right?
That's right.
And if, you know, Johnny Cochran's coming for you, and if it's not Johnny Cochran, it's Johnny Cochran Jr. or Senior, right? Somebody's coming for you because you spent those rounds. And if you spend those rounds and they don't hit their intended target, it's something else, suddenly you're liable for it. Now, civilians know that. Cops know that. But for some reason, we as civilians, even the untrained, are hitting with more accuracy and more often than the cop is. So to me, when I get to train cops, that's the biggest thing is get them really good and fast their gun, but also accurate to where they know they hit their target, because they got to stand before God, a judge, a jury, their administration, and themselves with the rounds they expend. So therefore, getting those boys and girls, those heroes, to be able to hit their targets more often, even if we increase it by half of what they do now or double what they do now, that's a good thing.
Right. Now, what so let's kind of like talk about it. So if I carry concealed or what are your thoughts on concealed or open carry when I'm out and doing the thing? I'm out of town. I'm going to Walmart. I'm going to, you know, maybe even a shadier part of town. What do you do?
All right. So this will generate some hate. Okay.
All right.
All right. Friends don't let friends open carry.
Sorry. I agree with that. But
yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's going to be people that disagree, but seriously, I mean, you hear every week, it just happened last week where it was Texas, something, some dude straps on a gun on his hip because mommy and daddy didn't give him enough attention when he was a kid. So he straps on a gun so he can walk around with a big old hog leg on his hip so he can look cool at Walmart. Right. Yes. And he's looking cool at Walmart or wherever it was he was at. And next thing you know, the gun gets taken away from him. He gets beat with it, shot with it. And this happens every week in America, or at least darn near. Right. Don't do that. Because if you're somebody like me, right, who if I just let's say it's you or me without a moral compass and I see a gun on your hip, you know what I see? I see my new free gun. Right. If we didn't have a moral compass, to me, that's just my new free gun. Right. If you're dumb enough to open carry a gun, you're probably not that observant as observant as you think. And therefore, somebody with real skills is going to take that gun away and it's their free gun. And usually they got to fight for the gun. So therefore, you're going to get shot if you're the one that open carry. Now, I know a lot of people open carry safely all the time, but I strongly discourage it strongly. And I would tell you the research does not prove that an open carry gun deters crime. It doesn't scare criminals. It doesn't anything. Right. If anything, it's just a free gun. I would tell you, you should be carrying concealed. You should carry concealed almost all the time. There is a time and a place for open carry, maybe on your own land. You're out in the outback, right? I live in Arizona and Colorado areas. Maybe you're on your horse, your ATV, and you're driving around. You're not worried about the dust. Fine, then open carry. But the second you get into the public arena, you need to, where there's people about, you need to conceal that gun, because if they can't see it, they can't know you have it. Right. One, if they do try to attack you, you can ninja on them a whole lot easier because they don't know there's a threat. And why not ninja on people? So to me, the open carry thing, and I know those people, they die on that hill. That open carry thing to me is just literally, and I mean this kindly, stupid.
Yeah, no, it sounds right. I think one of the deterrents, and again, I don't want to sound negative on cops because it's not where I'm coming at all, but people were taking guns away from cops.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if a cop has it taken away from him, I'm in theory, in my mind, maybe less trained than the average cop out there. And they're more protective of their gun than I would think I would be.
Yeah.
So yeah, if they're getting that guy and people have the balls to do it to that guy, yep, then why the hell wouldn't they take it away from me? So, and that's kind of my attitude on that.
Yeah, one, exactly. You know? I mean, I can talk about this from experience, right? My partner and I, former LAPD cop, came to us. Great cop, excellent shooter, right? I got into an arrest with a dude, and I'm hooking this guy, and he's prison strong, right? He had just got out of prison. He's all yoked up. He's high on drugs. And as I hook him, it turns into a massive fight. In that fight, it was like a 4-minute long fight. In that fight, one of the many things that happened is he tried twice while we're struggling and tied up with each other. He tried twice to pull my gun out of my holster, right? He was going to pull out and try to kill us. My partner was right behind me. He tried to drive his gun over to shoot the guy in the back of the head, but I was so close and tied up and fighting over the gun. My partner was afraid if he hit the guy, it went in the skull, it bounced around and come out and hit me in the face. So he couldn't pull the trigger twice. It turned into a huge fight after that. But I mean, think about this. These people are not afraid of you just because you have a badge, just because you have a gun, just because you might have training. If they're willing to take it from a cop, they're certainly going to take it from, you know, the big old honking boy that just has to throw it on his hip to look cool, right? Just without the skills and the training and the tools and the backup. So to me, please, if there's one thing I can say to folks, if you're an open carrier, please, please, please be more thoughtful. Learn to use a gun from concealment. That's a skill. That's a true skill. And learn to be a lot better with it from concealment. So that way, if your day comes, yeah, it might slow you down by a tenth of a second, but at the same time, if people don't know it's there, you can usually surprise them.
Right, exactly. You can look for that opportunity. No, no doubt. That definitely makes a lot of sense. And no, I can appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, even, you know, you mentioned on your property, I can understand, like you said, completely fine open carry on your property. I get it, you know, and at least in a lot of places, I know in New York, that wouldn't have flown anyway. Even with a decent, like, if, man, the UPS guy comes up, it's weird and awkward in New York. You know, where I am here, it's, you know, whatever. That's
it's common.
But still, I carry concealed on my property just because that's how I'm used to carrying and used to drawing and whatever. But I always am like, oh, I should have it with me, because how often is, you know, the fox is coming out after my chickens or something, and you're like, oh, it was in the house and I wish I had it, or, you know, whatever. I mean, again, that's kind of the world I live in. That whole like farmer thing is a little different than, maybe your average guy.
Yeah. And think about this. If you're out and about on your property, or let's say you go ATVing or razoring up in the mountains or wherever it is you go, right? That garment over the gun, especially if you have optics on it, helps protect it from the dust and everything else. Right. And why get dust and dirt and leaves and junk into the little tiny cracks of a gun, right? You start adding stuff into it and suddenly the gun doesn't work as well. I want my gun to go bang 100% of the time.
Yeah.
So anything I can to protect it from the environment, I'll do. That's why you'll see, even in modern cop holsters, they start having hoods that go over almost the whole gun to include their optics, right? To protect it, because it's open. So they do a part of what you see in good holsters is to hide it, to protect it from the elements. So to me, a good concealed carry holster does the same thing. It's just when they don't see it, and therefore maybe they don't suspect you're a victim, you know, or you're, or maybe they think you're an easy victim and don't realize you're not. So it's to your favor almost 99% of the time to have a gun concealed.
All right. Any insight on what people should be carrying or what type of gun or whatever? I have thoughts, but let's hear yours.
Okay. So mea culpa here. Understand, I am what you'd officially call a brand ambassador for H&K, right?
That's what I carry. I like
that. Oh, you do? Oh, you know, boys and girls listening, this is a man with a clue. Chuck, there you now go. I like
it. All right. My EDC is a VP9SK, so...
Boom. Okay.
Right. You know, but go ahead.
You and me are going to be friends. All right. So same thing, right? I'm a brand ambassador with H&K. I carry the VP9. Almost all, in fact, I think all my instructors but one carry VP9s. And then I have a whole box of them sitting right here that I give out at courses for people to use, because I want them to experience a VP9. Okay. So I would tell you that H&K is probably, in my opinion, is the best gun to carry if you're taking a stock out of the box gun for a couple different reasons. But to me, H&K VP9 or the SK, as Chuck just said, for those listening, right? That's a slightly smaller compact version. Right. There's the other H&K, which is the P30. It's got kind of a hammer in the back. I'm not a big fan of hammers, though the P30 is a phenomenal gun. If you're carrying a gun with a hammer, I would suggest to you that's just one more failure point. I had one of my partners rolling around in the dirt, fighting with people, and he had a hammer gun, think like a 1911, and a little bit of stuff got stuck behind the hammer. So when it came time to do the Lord's work with that thing, it could not do it. So to me, anything that where you can introduce the stuff that we fight in, which is rolling around in stuff, into the gun itself is a bad idea. Okay, so though the P30 is a great gun, right? It's mostly a closed hammer system. If it's got a hammer, I'm not a huge fan. All right, so if you're not going to get the VP9, I would suggest a couple other guns, right? And they're kind of all the same to me. Take the Walther, the brand new Walther PDP. I think it's a great gun. It's got one of the best triggers on the market. There's three different things with that gun particularly I don't like, but it's a good gun. It's a good gun. So the PDP series of Walthers. Another one would be the new M&P 2.0s, not the Shield. Don't buy Shields. I know it's one of the most common
concerns. Yeah, a lot of people carry the Shield.
A lot of people carry it because it's really thin, but understand the hand is an oval. When you hold a gun, it's an oval. Yeah. The Shield is real thin, real wide, real thin this way and real wide this way. It doesn't fit the hand well, and I find usually – unless you're a big dude with big paws, you have a hard time shooting the Shield well. Though it might be a quality gun, I don't suggest the Shield. Get the standard size 2.0. You can get the compact. Do not get the first versions. I'm not a fan of the M&Ps because of one different thing with their trigger system, or really their safety system, but it's a pretty decent gun. I carried one on the SWAT team in the PD for about a year, year and a half, and I realized it's not that great for me, so I got rid of it, but it's a decent gun. Another one, which is the most common gun out there, is the Glock, right? Stock out of the box, a Glock, you know, they claim Glock perfection all, but really, I tell you, if you want to make a Glock like a VP9, you got to spend about the same amount of money you spent to buy the gun in the first place, right? So if it's $600, $700 gun, you got to spend the same amount of money again to get it to where I tell you it's like a VP9.
Right, right.
But it's the most common. They're considered bomb-proof. I've seen them break many times over, but they work. A Glock is a good gun for self-defense, but I tell you, you got to change the trigger. You absolutely have to change the sights. 100%, you got to change the sights. You should probably change the barrel. You should probably get the undercut. You should probably change kind of how the grip is set up. You know, a couple different things.
Yeah.
But it's the most common gun out there, so I get it. Another one would be, I'm not a huge fan, but let's see here. I just lost it off the tip of my tongue. Doggone it.
SIG, or where are we going?
Okay, yeah, well, we could go with SIG, right?
All right.
SIGs, I tell you, SIG almost always gets it right. They get close every time.
That's it.
They get close. I'd tell you probably their better gun, if you're talking concealed carry, would be the SIG 365X or XL. Don't buy their 365.
All right.
It's too small, right? So get the 365 XL, you know, with where you can put the optic on there and put an optic on it. Let's see here. The SIG 320s, right? Great little hand grenade. So if it falls, jump on it. save us all. Decent gun. I don't like the way it's built. I don't like the beaver tail. I don't like how the hide over board stuff, but it shoots. It shoots. It's a decent gun. And those variations thereof. Smooth gun. Let's see here. There's one more I'm thinking. Oh, the FN. I'm not a fan of the FN. No. But if you're going to get an FN, get like the, what is it? The P10. The PD09 or PD9 or something like that. Get that gun if you're going to get it. But you immediately need to change the trigger. You need to change a couple things on it to make it a decent gun. But I've seen a lot of those not work terribly well, but they work better than most. Beyond that, I'm sure there's one gun I'm leaving out. But beyond that, I wouldn't recommend too many other guns. Here's the main guns I'd look at. HK, VP9 or VP9SK. Then I'd look at the SIG 365 XL series. And beyond that, maybe the Walther PDP series. Beyond that, those are the three guns you should get. If you're going to get a Glock, you got to doll it up a little bit to make it worthwhile. And it's a good gun, but you got to work on it to get it there.
Right. I kind of have that same approach, and I'm sure you've had your hand on more than I have, but I started out early on, like when I was in the military, I did my qualifications with a Glock, and I don't know if the guy never cleaned it or what his deal was, but this thing, like, it seemed like every fifth or sixth round was jamming. Maybe it was just really cheap ammo and didn't have enough powder, but would get caught, in the slide. As it would eject it, it would eject a live round or whatever and catch it. And so it made me do really well because they counted all those as bullseyes. So, push me into the marksman area. But aside of that, I was like, wow, Glocks are crap. And again, it could have just been the wrong ammo, that kind of thing. Because if you're like, I know a lot of guns. If you don't have enough powder, in there, yeah. They use low, that kind of thing, you'll have issues. You got to find the right setup for you. Obviously, yeah. These people did not.
Yeah.
Next, and I'm sure the military is using cheap bulk crap, whatever. At least this was a million years ago. I'm old. What? So I was like, oh, Glocks, they're not for me. That's not my thing. Everything I read at the time when I got my first concealed carry, which was a long time ago, probably 15, 20 years ago, HK wasn't really a thing in the popular, normal guy, world. So I ended up, I was an idiot, and I bought a SIG 1911 GSR, which is huge, and it's some big monster, whatever. And I'm like, oh, that thing weighs about 8 pounds.
Right.
Now, mind you, I had some kind of like SIG make this concealed carry jacket. It's like a Carhartt kind of thing, and it's got the big Velcro lining, so you can throw it in there. Totally concealable, but it's like 8 pounds, and I'm like, lean into the side everywhere I walk. I had to put two magazines on the other side just to balance me out, to carry it. And then I was like, ooh. And then I go to the gun store. I buy a Ruger SR22. Now I got to say, nothing feels better in the hand than that. Maybe the VP9. I really do like the way the VP9 is because they have all the interchangeable grips and all that. Right. And that's awesome. And that's what sold me on that later. The SR22, the trigger is horrible, though. It's like, you're pulling something there.
Right.
But it felt good in the hand. And I'm like, all right. So I did that for a little while. And I always preach to people, the gun that you're going to carry is the gun you should buy, right? If it's too big and too bulky, or it's too uncomfortable, or it jabs you, if that's going to stop you from carrying it with you, carry the one that, is going to work for you, and be comfortable.
But yeah, there is the balance of right to gain something, you've got to give up something. So you want the balance of large enough to absorb the recoil, right, to where it's not a tiny little thing jumping in your hands, with also a large enough caliber that it can quit or more quickly stop people if it needs to. And it's also concealable, right? So the problem is most people try to get just concealable. And just concealable doesn't mean good stopping power or impact power, punch through with caliber. And usually it means it's so small that if it's got good caliber, it's going to be very jumpy in the hands, right? So, to me, you've got to find that right balance. And yeah, find one you'll carry. But usually I would tell you buy a quality one that's the right balance of power, concealability, everything. And just be willing that if you're going to carry concealed, you got to surrender a little bit of comfort with it, maybe, until you get used to it. I'm so used to carrying a duty size weapon now with, I got a flashlight on an optic that now
right.
if I don't have it. It's weird. So, so that's what I carry, but find the right ones out there. Now, caliber wise, I would tell you carry a 9mm every time. Get a 9mm. Don't get the 45s. I see somebody comment about Super Blackhawk 44.
Yeah. Right.
And obviously he's joking, right?
Right. Right.
But, get a 9mm with good modern bonded hollow core ammunition that does really good. It has the same stopping power, this and that, you name it, of, say, a 40, 45, certainly over more so than the 380s or the 22s and all. But get a good one, and 9mm is good. I see somebody else, too, comment on here, Mayhem County Living, Country Living. Yeah, comment on the XDM Elite, right? I know they're very popular out there. I would tell you right now that I would steer you away from the XDR series. There's really only one nationally wide trainer that uses that gun, only one out of the ones that are out there. That's kind of a clue. There's no good police department, no really solid police department, no military unit that'll let you use that unless you're Czechoslovakian or something that'll let you use it. That's a clue. It's not a terribly reliable gun. And I've seen thousands of those things come through on my range, and I've seen a lot of failure rates with those. So just be careful with those guns. They shoot well, but I'd be careful with them. But get a 9mm, get a good balance of concealability. One of the good things about H&K for you, Chuck, is if you're looking for slightly more concealed than even the SK, is they're working on, I believe, they won't really confirm it, but pretty good sources here. They're working on something that's more smaller sized, that has the right calibers, the right concealability. And if you know H&K, they have such high quality. When it comes out, it's going to be if not a game changer, it's going to be one of the top concealed guns in the market.
Nice. Yeah, no, you're starting trouble picking on different guns. I mean, I guess
you can
be happy, right?
Watch the hate roll in.
We're all, yeah, exactly. I think ammo, too. Know for me, my gun store, I used to drive by one in New York all the time that I got paid in cash with a lot of things, and I'd just stop by the gun store, and they'd be like, oh, you know, here's that guy who has lots of money to spend, and they were always throwing the right ammo at me. And, but I'd try out every different thing everywhere. And I kind of settled on, and my go-to is the HydroShock ammo.
Okay.
I think Federal makes it. HydroShock.
Yeah, I would tell you get away from that.
Yeah, tell me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd tell you get away from the HydroShock stuff. Technology has changed since the HydroShocks have come out. Things are better now. So you know, for its time and its place, it was great, right? Back in the early 2000s, the 90s or whatever. I would tell you there's two rounds that I would carry in defensive life. And I think they're interchangeable. I have one particular I like for one specific reason, but they kind of work. Get the Federal HSTs. Get the Federal HSTs or get the Speer Gold Dot G2s. Speer Gold Dot G2s. I don't care what grain you get, but get those right there. I personally like the Speer Gold Dot slightly better. When you look at all the tests and all the stuff, the research that comes out, I like how they load in a gun slightly more smoothly to my feel than the HSTs do. But to me, either or, six of one, half dozen of the other, those are two only calibers. If you're not going to go with that, and those are the two best ones out there, buy those. If you're not going to go that, I'd tell you the next tier step down would be the Winchester Ranger XTs. Same thing we carried in the police world. I had good luck with those, right? When I had to use it in defensive life, they did exactly what they were supposed to do. But when you look at the testing, they're just slightly lower in all the testing in the results than, say, the Speer Gold Dot G2s or the Federal HSTs. So for those purposes, I'd go with that. So either go with those two, the Federals or the Gold Dots. If not, go with the Winchester Ranger XTs. Beyond that, I wouldn't recommend too many others. And though America loves the Hornady Critical Defense and the Hornady ammo, especially in handguns, I would tell you, throw that crap away. That stuff, I've had more trouble with those things. And the testing is not that great. You name it. Please, please throw that stuff away. That little rubber thing catches on the feed ramps. The angles the bullets are too tight. The sharp part of there that digs into the feed ramp. I've had so many troubles with that thing. And again, the testing's not quite as good on the impact and what the wound cavitation, wound channeling is when it impacts. So to me, if I can talk people out of the critical defense and the other Hornady handgun stuff, I do it. Now, in the rifle stuff, Hornady has some really good things. But for some reason, in the handgun world, they have just not done well. And they have great marketing. So that tends to be the most used round by Americans when you buy them. But I tell you, get away from that stuff.
All right. Now, I would say anything you decide that you end up feeling is the right ammo, don't just buy the box and load your magazine. Go out and shoot a bunch. Because I got to say, different stuff will cycle different in different guns.
Yeah. And
your gun might not just be just right for whatever. make sure it's going to work for you. You know,
I can
throw some rounds. Yeah,
there is that, especially if you have, like, I don't know, the feed ramps on the XDMs and all that other stuff. They're a little bit different, right? So you gotta look for those. But whatever you use as your ball ammo or your training ammo, right? Too many times we get used to that, and then we don't go shoot our duty ammo or our, what I call our social ammo, right? So you need to go out and about once a year run through a good box or two of your social ammo. And what I do is I carry my Spear Gold G2s for about a year, right? So far this year, I haven't had to use them. So what I do is at about every year, really on my birthday, about that time frame, so it keeps consistent, I go shoot up my carry ammo so that I put new ammo in, right? So I shoot that up really, you know, so I can feel the recoil, feel the difference of, because the recoil path, how it impacts its point of aim versus point of impact versus my training ammo is going to be a little bit different. And the memory fades. So you need to go redo that about once a year. And so every year I just cycle out my new ammo, right? My old ammo to my new ammo, and also just confirm that it does feel different, does impact different. And I need to know that, because if I ever had to use my gun in defensive life, I want my optics set up for my live rounds, my fighting rounds versus my training rounds. So go confirm that about once a year or so.
I like that. No, that's it. I mean, actually, you know, practice, getting your hands on stuff, doing stuff. That's really the biggest thing. So, all right, again, back to the concealed carry incident idea. What do you, like, when is it appropriate to draw your weapon? How does this, you know, assuming a civilian, right? Civilian, concealed carry, you got a legal gun, you're legal to carry it, you're, you know, legal carrying it wherever you are. And when is it appropriate for you to go and draw that weapon?
All right. So this is going to be a little bit different across the U.S. You have a pretty good size.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, you came from New York. So obviously what works in New York is going to be very different what I would do in Arizona or say my former recent home, Colorado. So you got to know your laws of your state. You got to know them well, right? Because you pull a gun defensive life, you got to count on the fact that Johnny Cochran is coming for you, right? Or the system will, or whatever else, right? Specifically California, New York, Illinois, right? Think geopolitically. If it's a state that hates guns, really, you take the Great Lakes states and run mostly down the East Coast towards, say, North Carolina, it's kind of a gun hating place, right? And you take the West Coast, kind of gun hating. So you got to know the gun laws of your state. You got to follow your laws of your state. If you're more the heartland of America that loves guns, or the South that loves guns, then you're probably got a little bit more latitude with what you do. But here's what I tell you, there's a common sense application here. No matter what your laws are in the states, all laws are set up that if you're in fear of your life, reasonably, right? Reasonably fear of your life or somebody else's life, or you're in fear of what we call in Arizona, Colorado, serious bodily injury, right? So think, you know, right, you a very bad injury. And I don't want to get into all the definitions of that, because that's a 30-minute conversation right there. But if you're in fear of serious bodily injury or death, and it's reasonable, and it's also imminent, right? That's a thing. So imminent. I jokingly tell people in Colorado, imminent, just think, right, it's in a short proximity of space and time. And I don't know what that is based on your physical abilities, you name it, right? It could be short. And I jokingly say, if you live down south, just take the word imminent and say a fixin' to. If it's a fixin' to, right, it's imminent. So there you go, right? So if you're in imminent, reasonable fear of serious bodily injury or death, you can reasonably pull a gun and use a gun in defensive life. But that's a very vague thing. And it's also going to be based on your jurisdiction, your PDSO, your police department, your sheriff's office, and your district attorney's office of your area. So whatever you do, it must be common sense, right? It must be reasonable. Fear of SBR death or serious bodily injury or death, that's imminent. And if you do that, you're fine. That's vague, isn't it? So because it's vague, you must be the reasonable person in here. But if you need to pull it, you can't hesitate, right? Because you have very small amounts of time in defensive life situations, because ambush predators don't wait for you to get ready. So it's got to be done quickly, because bad guys are ambush predators, but it must meet the law. So I hate to sound vague. Just think this way: reasonable, imminent, fear of serious bodily injury or death that could or is happening. could, meaning it's imminent, is happening, right? So therefore you can pull it.
Yeah, no, that sounds right. And that's a thing. I mean, I think some people invite confrontation by pulling it out too early, or, you know, just like, oh, I have a gun, I'm going to stop. And a lot of states like New York or something like that, you're really asking for trouble. Yeah. In a place, I mean, I'm in North Carolina. Apparently they shoot everybody in the street here all the time and whatever. My company, they shoot each other at work, whatever they got to do, they're down for it. But it really does know your environment. But also, it's so important that you're paying attention to who your politicians are, who your sheriff is, who your, you know, district attorney is, and that you actually go out and vote for these guys. And, you know, everyone gets so caught up in federal politics and everything. And obviously that matters. Your Supreme Court matters, defending your gun rights, all this stuff matters, but your local politicians are so directly going to impact your life, and especially your sheriff and your district attorney, and keeping, you know, an eye on that kind of thing, paying attention and actually voting for the right guy. You know, people have young kids, care about their kids, and yet they don't pay attention to the school board or the whatever's going on. And they just kind of let it slip by, but they're all caught up in, you know, oh, my congressman, this and that. But, you know, it's stuff that affects you directly. Make sure you guys are paying attention out there.
So I'm so glad you brought that up, right? Yeah. I mean, this is truly the important part to it, right? As you said, the feds can do whatever they want. You're going to be judged on the local level, right? So either A, getting out of a locality that's not good for you for the defense of life is a bright idea, right? Living in LA, living in New York, living in Chicago is probably not a good idea for you if you're a gun owner, gun carrier, right? Move to a more gun-friendly area. You know, sounds like you did that. So move to those areas, know your local people, and please, please, folks, votes matter, right? I tell you, maybe machines do too, but votes matter, right? So therefore, if that's the case, right, vote for the people that truly care about you. And if you get a defensive shooting, they don't care if you go to jail or don't. They just want the truth, right? They just want what's right. And they want to follow the law, because the law is really legalese that's common sense, right? Depending on where you live, but the 99%
where you live. Yeah.
Yeah. 99% of where we live in America, the law is really just they want to protect you, right, from evil. And if you have to defend yourself against evil, the law is just codified common sense. And if your common sense laws, once you understand the codification, the legalese of it, if it makes sense that really I was just in fear of serious bodily injury or death, that either could or is happening to me or somebody, you know, out there that I love, I need to pull a gun defense of life, then they're going to stand behind you because you did that, because it's based on the truth. So the votes matter. Go vote for the right people for your area, because you're going to be judged on the local level. And it's the local system that's going to always be your friend. The federal system, nobody really cares, right? And two, that's so screwed up that it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly. You're fighting the, you know, I always hear people, well, the Constitution says, and I'm like, yeah, but who follows the Constitution? That's kind of, you know, irrelevant. I mean, we want it to be good. We want it to be right, but it's not where people are, you know?
Just a minute. The courts do follow, right? The vast majority, but what if they don't, right? And what if they take a bad view of the Constitution? So the laws are based on the Constitution, both of your state and the federal system. They're really well done. You've got to trust in it. But if I lived in New York, LA, San Francisco, Chicago, right, if it was a bad area, then I'm probably going to go, okay, though I trust the Constitution, I'm going to move to an area that's going to more likely defend me if I ever have to pull the gun defense of life. Because as a common sense person or a law abiding person, I'm not going to pull the gun unless it's common sense and law abiding. Right. And those are important things, because if you pull it for any other reason besides that, you're putting yourself in massive legal jeopardy. And now you might spend the rest of your life in a cage somewhere. And who wants to do that? Right. So, right. Gun on, ego off, follow the law and be in areas, live in areas that, protects you. It's for the same reason that we don't go vacation in LA. We don't go vacation in New York. I've never been. I want to go. But you know what? Defense of life. I'm not going to take my family there to where one, I can't technically officially defend them by carrying the tools I need to. And three, if I did ever get myself in a defensive situation, then I'm likely going to be judged by a law that's less understanding of the defensive life. So therefore, I just don't go there.
And I hate to say it. I mean, that's it. That's what drove me out of New York. You know, the laws kept changing and getting worse and worse. And there were ways to work around it. Like, it wasn't that horrible. I mean, they've gotten worse since I've left. But, and I saw it coming, so I was like, I got to go. But we had the SAFE Act, which, you know, you had to register your AR-15s. And that, again, wasn't a big deal. I had two that I registered, and the rest I just disassembled, kind of thing. Because it turns out you can walk into a gun store in New York and buy an AR-15 lower. You can buy all the parts and mail them to your house and have them in your house and have both things. You just can't put them together. And what was even crazier is I could take my registered lower, put all my uppers on it, sight them in, set them up, do everything I want, and then take them apart and whatever. And if I wanted to go shoot that gun, you know, an 18 inch, whatever, with this scope and this, whatever, I could go shoot that with that lower for the day. And then I'd have to go home and take it apart to be within the law, which is just, you know, whatever. That's insane. But it just, yeah, I moved down south. Now I can have suppressors and short barrel rifles and whatever I want. And nobody's, you know, in my business. Obviously, the world is going to keep encroaching on gun rights in the future. Seems like what's happening. But anyway, you know, you go to where it's convenient and good to you, but you also go to where you can protect your family. And that, you know, that's really what matters. Protect your own life. That too. So I know we're kind of dragging it out here. I don't want to, you know, I don't think we're dragging the episode, just dragging your time. But the other thing, like, so what happens? All right, you have a shooting incident. Somebody comes up, you know, threatens harm and whatever, and you end up having to draw your weapon and fire on somebody. What's the next scenario? What are we doing?
So we had a saying in the cop world that says, don't be grabbing Motorola when you should be grabbing Smith & Wesson, right? I would like to change that just because I'm an H&K guy, right? Don't be grabbing grabbing Apple or Samsung when you should be grabbing H&K. Meaning this, right? You've just used a gun defensive life. Do not split your attention between your gun and getting on your cell phone to call 911. Don't do it. If you're not safe enough to put your gun away, you're not safe enough to get on a phone, right? Okay. Don't get on the phone. You've gone bang with a gun defensive life. Don't holster the gun until you know you're 100% safe, right? There was, I think it was last year, maybe the year before, and it was probably Connecticut or something, or New Jersey. I forget. It could have been New Jersey, somewhere. A pizza delivery dude got attacked because he's delivering pizza. He pulled a gun. He defended himself with the gun. And he stood there for a minute and just, I think he holstered the gun. He just stood there in shock. And girlfriend came up from behind of the guy he shot, pulled the gun out of his holster because he's open carrying by this time, pulls the gun out of the holster, shoots him in the back of the head and kills him, right? So don't holster the gun unless you know you're safe. That means your entire environment, 360 degrees around you, is completely safe and you know nobody can get you, right? If you have to, get away, move, go away, right? But don't holster the gun unless you're safe. If you're safe, holster the gun and immediately reconceal the gun, right? Because responding cops coming up might see you there with an open carried gun, might presume you're the bad guy based on fragmented information that came to them, right? Because by the time the telephone game has happened and the information came to the cop, they've got fragmented information. They don't know what they're going to. They just know there's been a gunfight and you might be the good guy, the bad guy, right? So holster and reconceal the gun. Okay. So if you're going to put it away, okay. From there, if you're safe and you've concealed your gun now, right. From behind some type of concealment and cover, whatever else, move away from the scene, right. Keeping a good eye on the surroundings of you, get on your cell phone and call 911. Now understand in today's world, there's probably 2, 3, 5, 10 other people calling 911. There's probably also 2, 3, 5, 10 others videoing it with their cell phones, right? So you've got to count on that. Now, because other people are calling 911, understand you need to tell your story. Be the one to tell your story. So you call 911 and you let them know what's going on. If you can't holster the gun because you don't feel safe, don't split your attention to a phone. Have somebody else call 911 for you, right? Just tell them call 911, okay? Now, if you're the one's going to tell your story, right, there's several things I recommend. Be very careful with what you say because everything you say is being recorded. It's not there to help you. It's not there to hurt you. It's just being recorded, right? It's going to be presented to the DA's office, to the police department, to juries later possibly, and they're just going to hear what happened. So you need to be cognizant of this. You need to think through what you're going to say ahead of time. You need to be cognizant of your breathing rate. You need to be cognizant of how you sound. You need to be cognizant of your volume. And these are things to practice ahead of time because you thought it through. But calmly let them know, one, who you are, where you're at. And I would suggest letting them know, hey, I was at this location. I was attacked and in fright of my life, and I had to defend myself. Please send help. And then be quiet. Get off the phone, right? Or some very low, could we say, careful, gentle words of something like that. Who you are, where you're at, you had to defend your life or somebody else's, please send help. And get off the phone, right? Dispatch or 911's always going to tell you to stay on the phone. Don't stay on the phone. Don't do it. Don't do it. They have no legal authority to tell you what to do. They're dispatchers. I love those people. I know hundreds of them. I love them with all my heart. But they have no legal authority to tell you to stay on the phone. Don't do it because that splits your attention. As soon as you can, get off the phone. Put the phone away and bring back your full, complete, undivided attention to what's going on around you until the cavalry does show up, until the cops do, right? So who you are, where you're at, you had to defend life, please send help, right? Or somebody's been hurt, please send help. We don't say, I just shot somebody. We don't tell them what kind of guns. We don't tell them how many shots we shot. We don't tell them anything. Hey, I had to defend life. Maybe somebody's hurt. You know, maybe something like that. Please send help. Be careful with your verbiage. Be very sparing with your verbiage, right? Because you don't want it to pop up against you later. Then wait for the cops show up. As the cops show up, right? Woo, lights and sirens are coming. From that point forward, right? You make sure you know you're the good guy. I would declare something like victim, victim. I'm the good guy. I'm the good guy, right? I would keep, and I don't want to go out of the camera, but I'd put my hands up as high as I possibly can or make sure there's no way they know that I'm a threat to in this situation, right? From there, I would do whatever the cop tells you to do. Understand, when a cop believes or suspects that there's a gun involved in this situation, they can legally tell you anything they want you to do. So I live in Arizona, and it's becoming hot, right? So let's say it's 110, 115 degrees out, and you're on black asphalt, and that black asphalt, because it's absorbed the sun during the day, is 125 degrees. If the cops say, get on the ground, just cook, right? Yeah. Do whatever you got to do. If you live in New York because you like cold stuff, and it's, I don't know, below zero, and it's ice, and you're in your little teeny-weeny bikini, and they say, get on the ground, just burn on the ice. Whatever the cop tells you to do, you do. Don't go reaching for the gun, being like, here's the gun, right? This is what I used, because the cops are going to shoot you, right?
Yeah.
So follow their advice. You're probably going to get handcuffed. Go with it. The cops don't know you. They don't know anything about you. You just used a gun. So if you used a gun, be ready for you to be handcuffed up. It could be rough. Get over it. You just had to defend life, right? They're probably going to put you in the back of a patrol car and you ask you some questions. I would do the same thing with the police officers that I would do with dispatch. Hey, here's who I am. Here's where you can find me. Here's my address. Here's my phone number, whatever else. I was here. And I would tell you, hey, if you're a concealed carry permit holder, or maybe you're in a state, you don't need that. It's constitutional carry. Hey, I had a gun. I carry a gun, defense of life. Somebody attacked me. I was in fear of my life. I had to defend my life. And I would stop right there.
Yeah.
From that point forward, I'd tell them with all due respect, and I would tell them this with all due respect, sir, ma'am, all due respect. From that point forward, I need to talk to my attorney now.
Definitely.
Right. Give them the same things you gave to dispatch. Let the evidence speak for itself. Immediately lawyer up.
Yeah.
Immediately lawyer up. And all due respect, sir, ma'am, nothing against you folks, but I need to talk to my attorney before I make any further statements.
Yep.
Now, understand there's a difference between saying I would like to talk to my attorney legally than there is I want to talk to my attorney. When we say, hey, I think I should talk to an attorney, or we, and sometimes people stupidly turn to the cop and they go, hey, should I talk to an attorney now? Don't be doing that, right? The cop's not going to tell you yes or no. You just tell them, I want, it's a declarative statement. I want to talk to my attorney before I say anything more. We don't say in less emphatic language, I think I should, I kind of want to, I'd like to. No, no. I need to talk to my attorney before I say anything more. Okay. From that point forward, if they keep asking you questions, just come back, sir, ma'am, no disrespect intended. I'd like to talk to my attorney. Now, if the cop says, hey, look, the evidence doesn't look good right now, and you could go to jail if you don't answer this question, go to jail.
Right.
So what?
Right.
Right. Three hots and a cop. Right. Go sit yep. in jail for a little bit. Don't talk to anybody in jail, not your cellmates. They're not your friends, not the booking tech, not the intake techs, not the cops, not to anybody. Be quiet until you get to talk to your attorney on the phone. Okay. So whatever you do, here's who I am. Here's the very general basis. I was here. I was attacked. I was in fear of my life. I carry a gun concealed. I defended my life.
Right.
Sir, ma'am, no disrespect intended from this point forward. I need to talk to my attorney. From that point forward, only talk to your attorney. Understand if the cops tell you to go home, right? If they're like, okay, all right, we'll get back to you later. Go on home or whatever else it is. Do not go home and talk to your buddies and your friends and everybody right. else about this type of thing. Because only those who are maritally contracted to you, your husband or wife, not your live-in boyfriend, not your shacked up girlfriend, not anybody, right? Only your legally contracted marital spouse cannot be forced to speak against you. So if you want to talk to them, great. It's them and your attorney. Talk to them and your attorney. If you're fearful that your marriage might not survive, and that's a real thing, by the way, if you're fearful your marriage might not survive, your spouse can choose to testify against you. So if you have a maritally contracted spouse, somebody you're actually married to, and you tell them the details of this thing, if they ever decide that they don't like you anymore, which can happen, they can choose to testify against you. So that's something to be to understand. And if you use a gun in defense of life, there's a likelihood, because it will change your life so much, that even if you've been married 10, 20, 30, 50 years, you might end up in a divorce, a very high likelihood you might end up in a divorce in 2 or 3 years, simply because it changes you and changes your life litigiously, financially, legally, emotionally, mentally so much that they decide, hey, I didn't marry this person. I married the person they used to be, and now I want to go find me a new one.
Right.
So understand that does happen to a lot of people who've used a gun defensively.
I like it. Now, last thought, what do you think about all these concealed carry insurance things? I'm sure they have to be a plus, but what's your thought?
Okay, so if you own a gun in defense of life, specifically of a concealed carry permit, you carry a gun in defense of life, I would tell you with respect, you are stupid and foolish if you do not have something like this. You're stupid, right? There's three main things you need to do as a gun carrier. One, you must know the laws of your jurisdiction well. Two, you must be mechanically, if not expertly proficient with that gun. And that's a lot harder than most people think. It takes realistic training to become truly mechanically expert with a gun. Okay. Three, you must prepare for the massive legal and other aftermath that is coming. There's multiple aftermaths. One of the huge ones is the legal side, both civil and criminal. Really, I'd say criminal then civil. And for a lot of us, if you have jobs and everything else, then there's also an administrative aftermath, right? Your employer might decide to get rid of you or lessen your impact, whatever else. So there's multiple legal sides to this. So you need legal representation. You need the best legal representation you can get. Now, unfortunately, best good legal representation is extremely expensive, right? And I'll bet even you, Chuck, might not have $3 million sitting around just so you can just employ good attorneys if you have to go bang with a gun. Maybe you do. I don't know. But most people don't. And it's probably going to cost you, you can count on at least $500,000 to $600,000 minimum just to defend life, to up to several million dollars just to defend yourself in the legal system. So you need some type of, you said insurance, I'd tell you prepaid legal. Do not buy the insurance products that are out there, right? Like, you know, there's the USCCA and others, that's a insurance version. Don't buy that stuff. Please don't buy that stuff. Instead, get prepaid legal. Now, I am a brand ambassador also with Firearms Legal Protection, or FLP. That is right now, I believe, the very best one on the market by far, right? Chuck's, if you have it, great. Sign up through Chuck here. If not, you can use Defenders.
Use your thing. Right. Yeah, nope.
Yeah, you'll get a discount. It's not much, but you'll get a discount if you sign up through Defenders USA. You need to get that. The other one, if you don't like FLP, and by the way, they're the best on the market. I've had to use these type of things in defensive life. I know exactly what it's like. You need something like this. If not FLP, which you should get. If not, the other good one out there that I'd tell you is slightly not as good, but very good, is called CCW Safe or CCW Safe. That's a good one. They do a lot of good things. I don't think they quite do all the things FLP does, but they do good. Beyond that, there's a couple others that are out there. There's four or five others that are decent out there, but they're not as good. I've done a lot of research. I spent a lot of time on this because having had to live this in the aftermath of a use of gun and use of force, you know, lethal use of force, I know what it's like. I know what it's like to go through the court system. So therefore, it's one of my passions to get people prepared for that. So look into it. Part of the good parts of FLP is that they contract, except for in like the state of Montana, they contract with the attorneys that are local to your jurisdiction. So they have their big attorneys, right, that do the nationwide stuff that come in for you, right? They know that they're the experts at it, but they also contact the local attorneys that are the good ones who know the system, know the judge, know the DA's office, know the defense attorneys. They know them all, and they know how the system works in your jurisdiction. And every court jurisdiction works a little bit different than others, and the personalities are different. So therefore, you want local representation. You want the big gun hitters attorney gun guys and girls. And you combine those together, FLP does, I think, probably the best job. Beyond that, one of the things FLP offers, and a few of the others do that do the good ones, is also they offer counseling in the aftermath. Right, Chuck, you're a big, solid, tough, former military guy and all. You go to bang with a gun in defensive life here in litigious America, it changes your life completely. It does. And I know a lot of people think, I don't need it. Go to counseling. Go to counseling. And it's not your pastor. It's not your priest. It's not your whomever at your church. Go find somebody who's good at counseling with people and pulling out the stuff that you go through when you are the giver of violence, when you are the taker of life. That's different than going to, say, your pastor or priest. Go to those people, study how to do this to help you cope with this. Because if not, I have too many friends and the military world, the police world, and the civilian world, that after they've done things defensively with guns, they drown their sorrows in a bottle. They drown their sorrows in a needle. They beat the husband or the wife. They spend too much time in credit, in games, in books, in movies. And they change their lifestyles to where now you no longer live the life that you were meant to live. And those who love you and deserve you don't get to have the you that they first signed up in the first place. And we let this unfortunate incident you had to be involved in now change your life. And that shouldn't be, right? So therefore, go to good counseling, seek that out, go get the good stuff to help you live the life you deserve to live after you've survived something like this.
No, I like it. So, I'll try and get that in the show notes too. The Firearms Legal Protection, and you said Defenders USA for the promo code.
Kind of thing. I believe it's Defenders USA. If you let them know or give them a call, but they're fantastic. Now, they don't work in all states. I think Montana, they're almost done filling that up. There's one other state somewhere, I forget what. But get those. If not, if you can't get it in your state, look at CCW Safe.
Nice. Last thing, I know you do a lot of training everywhere. People want to figure out how to defend themselves. So where are they going with training with you?
Okay, so our company has a lot of trainers in multiple states, right? I'm currently doing training, mostly I'm in Arizona and Colorado. Next week I'll be teaching in Colorado. So if you're in the Denver area, you want to come to a couple of days of firearms training. We do some fantastic world-class firearms training. We'd love to have you. I have some open spots. If not, I'm training in Texas, in Missouri, in Kansas, in Utah, and Montana, Colorado, and of course, Arizona. You can find us at our website, which is defenders-usa.com. Defenders-hyphen. You have to have the hyphen. Now, we currently just changed our website, and the ticketing or registration portion is not live yet. It will be, I think, tomorrow, because we changed it from our old website. So you can find us there or contact me directly, and I'll give you my phone number and all of my email. Contact me directly, and I can get you the links for the registration. You just can't see them on our current website. But we'd love to have you. If you want to come to us, come see us. And if you can't come see us, let us know. I'll point you to some of the really, really good trainers out there. There's a bunch of trainers. There's not many that are really, really good, right? So find the good ones. We'd love to be a part of your journey, but call us, contact us. We'll point you in the right direction.
Like that. Now, you guys also have a YouTube channel. What's that? That's Defenders USA also?
So we have two YouTube channels. One is Defenders USA. You see the shield in the background. That's what you'll see when you go look us up, just under Defenders USA. We got some good stuff up there, and it's growing all the time. And then we also have another YouTube channel called Defenders Live. So if you like what Chuck's doing here, we have a live broadcast that comes out, or video cast that comes out every Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. Mountain Time. So your time would be another 3 hours, right? Because you're on the East Coast. So it comes out another 2 hours. So it'd be 9 p.m. your time. So it comes out 7 p.m. Mountain Time. And it's run by a lady named Laura Thorson. I'm kind of the behind the scenes guy. I come on occasionally, but not very often, but she runs the whole thing. We talk to some of the industry-wide experts out there when it comes to the defense of life, and it ranges from a million different topics. So we have one coming out tonight. We have, Laura's going to be interviewing Adam Boyce with Spartan Mode. So truly world-class knife guy, hand-to-hand type of guy, phenomenal, excellent shooter, just incredible all around guy. He's a trainer out here in the West. We'll be talking to him this coming tonight. So we'd love to have you. We have all sorts of broadcasts on there if you go to Defenders Live. And we'd love to have you join up. So subscribe to both those channels, Defenders USA, Defenders Live.
I appreciate it. So if you guys like, subscribe, share the stuff, we'd appreciate it. Otherwise, stay safe, and we'll talk to you guys next week.